All right. I grew up, right around Fenimore, and I went to Utah State University for their dairy herdsman program. Came back in 2005, and I've been on the farm full-time ever since. We milk about 250 registered Jerseys. My wife, Sharice, is the county 4-H program coordinator, and we have three kids, two girls, Ziva and Jaylee, and a little boy named Callum.
What prompted you to go west for college?
I guess I was just looking for something different. Everybody expected me to go somewhere, in the dairy state, and it was a good experience to try something new and see dairying in a dry climate. So.
And tell us about that. What experiences did you have? Did you work on a dairy farm out west? Did you have a chance to travel and see dairy farms? What did you see?
I worked on a Jersey farm in Utah. We milked about 100 cows. It's very different there because there's not as much wind. A lot of farms have roofs, but they don't have like side curtains and everything like that because there's just not as much wind with the mountain ranges on both the east and west side of the valley I was living in. We did a lot of touring. We went down to central Utah and then up into the dairy capital or whatever they call themselves now in Idaho, because we weren't far from Idaho, but we toured some 10,000 cow dairies where it's just lot after lot of cows, and it was all they need out there is a dirt lot and a parlor, and they can start making milk.
What about the crops that they feed there compared to here?
They have a shorter growing season. A lot of stuff needs to be irrigated, so a lot of small grains. We did not feed corn on the dairy I worked on. It was all wheat, barley, oats, stuff like that. And then they make beautiful dry hay. They bale their hay at night because otherwise the leaves fall off. So that. My boss was telling me one day that, that valley to the west of us, sometimes it gets so wet with the dew on there, they have to quit baling at 2 in the morning. We usually quit at 8 or 9 o'clock at night because it was too much dew, but very different than it is here. A lot of corn silage and a lot of beautiful dry hay.
Well, let's talk about it. When you came back to the farm, what was the situation as far as how many cows were you milking? What kind of facility did you have? And, of course, that has changed in the time you've been there, right?
That's right. We milked 60 cows in a tie stall barn. And then 2008, we went through a big expansion, and we were milking two barnfuls of cows in the tie stall barn, but then we basically doubled, and we're around 250 to 275 now, mostly Jerseys, a few crossbreds. And then, it's a freestall barn and parlor, which my shoulders are hurting now instead of my knees, so it's a little different.
Let's talk about production-wise components and also milk production for the Jersey herd. How is it, and how do you feel about it?
I always wish we had more milk, but we're in the upper 50s per cow right now. Components, I think we're running about a 5.6 or 5.7 fat and real close to a 4.0 protein, so that really helps. When milk prices are good or bad,
milk prices can be described as good now, but with inflation, expenses, the pandemic, it's still tight, isn't it?
Exactly. We're definitely making more money, but we're spending more too, so I think it's just a juggling act.
The things you learned by working on the farm out west, have you brought any of that back here?
I don't know specifically. I'm sure there's things I learned in college or at the farm I was working on in Utah that may impact. We were milking in a tie stall barn, and we bedded with straw, and now we switched all sand and the freestall, so things are different. I don't necessarily know if it's because of Utah or just because of the changes we made on the farm.
Do you see your dairy cow numbers getting any bigger, or are you maxed out?
I don't see us growing anytime soon.
And finally, you mentioned about some mostly Jerseys, but you do have what's called Procross, and why don't you bring our listeners up to date on that?
We quit using sex semen for a while, and we were short on heifers, and I just found a group of 10 Procross heifers, which the Procross is a cross between Holstein, Swedish Red, and Montbelier, and then you just kind of keep the rotation going. They're very funny looking. They look a little beefy, but they're speckly, and they can be red and white, or black and white, or solid color, either black or red. They don't have the components that the Jerseys have, and they don't have the production that a Holstein has, but they're kind of a good cross in the middle. They're kind of fun, but I don't see us going that route with all of our cows.
It was just a case you needed some more cows, and where did these come from?
I have a friend from by West Bend on the eastern side of Wisconsin that I knew. I think in 2008, they were milking all Holsteins, and they happened to go on a farm tour in California. And when they got home, they emptied the Holsteins from the semen tank, and they bought all Montbelier, and they started the three-way cross, and I think in 2008. Now they're milking 600 cows All pro cross, and they had some extra heifers, so I bought 10 from them.
They have earned their keep in your herd then, right?
Yeah, 9 of them are still there. One we couldn't get pregnant, so she's in our freezer, but the other 9 are there. They're doing good. They're breeding back, so we're happy with them.
Do you see yourself maybe getting a few more, or is this probably the number you'll keep at there?
I think we'll keep breeding them to the three-way cross to, and you know, I guess if they procreate, then we'll add more. But I don't see us you know, buying more or changing our Jersey herd to become more Procross type.
And here we are, latter part of March. What's your feed supply situation as we head into the spring?
We had a beautiful 2021. Everything worked well. You know, the rye was good. Every crop of hay was good. Corn silage was fantastic. And then October, it rained. So we didn't get the last crop of hay made that we were hoping to. So we are buying a little bit of hay just to get us through till, you know, new crop rye and new crop first crop. But 2021 was pretty spectacular until that rain started in October.
Well, let's talk about growing a climate for tomorrow. That is the theme this year for National Ag Day, National Ag Week. That is why we are talking with you today. And when we hear the word sustainable thrown out a lot, and for you as a farmer, what does that word mean and how have you used it on the farm?
To me, I think all agriculture is sustainable. If you plant a seed of corn in the spring and you grow a crop, what's not sustainable about that? So I think it's a tough word to use, but it's important. Sustainable means something different to everybody. You can ask anybody in the world and they have a different definition of sustainable. So it's hard to be sustainable, but it's hard not to be sustainable in agriculture. Some of the things we're doing on our farm, we've done more no-till, some cover crops, biodiversity in what we're planting. We've planted more of a mixture that's sorghum sedan grass, clover, Italian ryegrasses, just trying different things to, you know, put more carbon in the soil, protect more water, and, you know, lead us into the next generation.
And how have you felt that has benefited your farm? Let's talk as far as the condition of the water.
It's such a slow process that you can't see a change day to day, but I think we're making slow improvements that 30 years from now, people that, you know, maybe left Southwest Wisconsin and come back, I think we're going to see improvements because of all of what all farmers are doing today. Less tillage, we're seeing less erosion because of some of the practices that we're doing on our farm and most farms.
One thing that's really been popular is the use of cover crops. When did that start to happen on your farm? And let's talk about how it's been going over the years.
It's become kind of a buzzword, almost as buzzy as sustainable. Cover crops is something you plant in the fall, basically to keep the ground covered all winter. In the past, we planted rye for years, but it was more to have an early crop to harvest in the spring to feed the cows and heifers. We've seen more and more people doing it, including ourselves, just to keep the ground covered. That reduces erosion. If there's bare spots in the soil and we get a hard spring rain, the rye or whatever we planted is going to hold the soil in place and not let that water run off of our land. In the past couple of years, we've started doing more different rotations and different mixtures to try to improve the soil health. We've added more legumes and grasses into our cover crop mixes to boost the soil fertility. Legumes put nitrogen in the soil, and we've started doing some tillage radishes or dicyne radishes that they're not used for a feedstuff, but when we plant them, they grow a long, deep root, and that root freezes and dies and puts holes in the soil that the next spring that aerates the soil. And also the radishes will pull nitrogen up from lower in the ground, and that nitrogen is available for the crop we plant the following year.
What usually is the crop you plant the following year after a cover crop, and does it depend upon what cover crop you plant?
It does. A lot of things changes. We kind of have been trying like a three crop rotation. We plant the sorghum sedan grass mixture with the Italian ryegrass and clovers spring one year, and then we harvest that throughout the summer, and then that covers through the winter. That's a perfect cover crop that keeps the ground green all winter long. And then we harvest that one time in the spring and plant corn and then let the corn grow. And after the corn, then we'll plant a mixture of rye and other legumes that when we take that off the following spring, then we'll plant that sorghum standgrass mixture again. So it's different. It's kind of interesting, and it really helps the soil because there's always something covering the soil, and we're growing different crops that each crop has something good for the animals and good for the soil because there's a mixture of cool season grasses, warm season grasses, and cool season legumes, warm season legumes. So there's always something growing and always something that we have to feed their cows, and it's feeding the soil.
What has that meant to your fertilizer bill, especially now with the prices people are seeing?
Fertilizer prices have skyrocketed, and we're seeing, you know, we can use less. It's definitely, we're not eliminating the use of fertilizer on our farm, but the mixture of cover crops and things we're doing, plus the manure from our cows, reduces the fertilizer that we have to use. So it's working very well for us.
You know, you've got grass waterways and contour strip. Again, things that have proven to work, right?
Contour strips have been around for decades, started after the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. And that's one of my favorite parts about Southwest Wisconsin. You go to Utah, you don't see contour strips. You go to Northern Wisconsin, you don't see contour strips. Southwest Wisconsin is beautiful, just driving around, seeing the alternating strips, and they protect our soil and water, and I don't ever see that changing.